time for a Sales Manager Spotlight, brought to you by Death Wish Coffee, the world's strongest coffee. And we're going to be talking to some of the world's strongest and smartest sales managers.
What they like, what they fear, how they hire. Doesn't matter if you're a manager, doesn't matter if you're a salesperson, it doesn't even matter if you're just a person. You're going to learn something from these top leaders from around the country.
And with that, it's time to get this week's Sales Manager Spotlight. Let's go to the boss's office. I promise, this time, it won't be scary.
Our guest today is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan is the co-founder and CEO of Atom Power Incorporated. Come on, is that cool or what? Ryan negotiated and built some of the most high-profile projects in the Southeast for several large corporations, having managed and built over 90 million and 4 million square feet in electrical construction projects. Please welcome diehards, the great Ryan Kennedy, who is revising, he is redoing how you look at your circuit breaker.
I think he's like transforming.
Oh, sorry, my God.
Couldn't help myself.
Yes, you could. Believe me, you could.
So just so our diehards, we really want to get into the selling aspects of this, but just so our diehards have a little bit of a better understanding about what you do in like a fifth grader's terms, can you explain what you've created?
I can do it in sixth grade.
All right, cool. Go for it.
So basically, all the power we depend so much on in a house, in a building, wherever it is, that all that power goes through a lot of different things called circuit breakers.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And those are just mechanical switches. You probably have one in your house.
We have lots of them.
Right?
Yep. Yeah.
They'll trip when there's a problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you got to go reclose it. And it's purely mechanical. And that technology's been the same for a long time.
Okay.
How many long time?
About 140 years.
Okay, so circuit breakers have been around for 140 years. Now pay attention, diehards, because you think they're going to be around for the next 10 years.
But, dun, dun, dun.
But there's a little bit of a shift that we're involved in, and that basically says that we should change that from mechanical to digital.
Right.
Ooh.
Because that's the last thing, really, that we know of in today's, any industry that we're a part of that is not connected and is not hyper-intelligent and is not semiconductor-based. Everything else has kind of shifted that direction, cars included.
Yeah.
Power systems haven't.
We have diehards in a similar situation where they're not just selling a product or a service, but they're also selling the new idea of it because it's so new that they have to sell the need for it, and then they can sell.
Yeah.
It's like a double sale, right? So you're selling that, oh, wait, the thing you have is outdated, and you need mine. How do you go about that? What does that look like?
Yeah, so that's, there is a little or a lot of that, which is you're trying to sell them on a problem sometimes they didn't know they had.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Or an innovation that they weren't ready for.
So how do you create that demand?
So the way we approached it was approached it very simply and to not look at the technical end of it, to say, here's why the technology's better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But instead to say, for even in front of crowds who are hyper-technical, hyper-intelligent, and knew their buildings in and out, knew their facilities, what we said is, why does arc flash happen? And what we would do is we'd show like a video, boom, you know, huge explosion, yeah. And ask the crowd, why does this happen? And then the natural answer is, well, electricity's dumb, idiot. Or not dumb. Sorry, electricity is dangerous, idiot, you know?
Okay.
And that's the answer. It's been taken for granted. And once you say, what if that didn't have to happen? You create this connection that says, or a realization that we've accepted something really bad for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And now we don't have to, or potentially don't have to. And that gets people interested, at least in the idea that something can be safe. Because people get turned off if you just go talk about product. Here's why our product is better, more technically advanced, et cetera. But instead, if you can say that we're doing something that we're trying to solve a major problem and not talk about product, but just say, what if that problem didn't have to occur? Mm-hmm. Same thing with remote control. You'd be surprised how many people we would ask. Hey, and again, very sophisticated data centers, high-rise building operators, things like that. How do you go control a breaker today?
Because you can control your light switches.
You walk up to the breaker.
You can walk in and go, Alexa, turn all the lights on.
Right.
But for the breaker, right. you have to walk up to it, hope that it's labeled properly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we're like, is it this one? No, try the next one. This one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's actually good reasons why it's like that and why the controls you see at the light switch, receptacles, things like that, why it hasn't progressed further upstream from that. You know, there's certain physical limitations that have been in place for many years. And anyway, what we're doing is changing that.
But think about this, diehards. Think about you have a new product in your line of whatever it is that, you know, this year we're launching the new, you know, super widget. And you have to go out and learn the product and then go out and sell the product. But in Ryan's case, it's a whole new world of technology. Yeah. To me, personally, it's kind of exciting.
Well, that's because you're an early adopter. Like
but
me.
I want to know, listen, if I could have my, if I could protect our computer equipment with technology that would stop a lightning surge from happening.
Or all of our IP.
Right. I'm in. I'm totally in. How do you get the IT kid who did in some big company to sit down and talk to you about what's the value of that?
I think that, so there's a couple things. One, we had to realize that one sales model doesn't fit all. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely the approach that or what we had to look at. Because a consumer product's one thing. A product like this is a whole different animal. Because
it's commercial and industrial predominantly?
It is commercial and industrial, but there's a whole set of decision makers. So unlike a consumer product, you typically have one or two.
Yeah.
And they're typically in the same household. But for something like this, you have an engineer. You have an electrician. You have someone who actually writes the purchase order, and then you have somebody who owns it day two.
Yeah.
So and if it's expensive, you need a banker.
That's right. That's right. So you have a whole ecosystem.
I can't see that your electronic stuff would not be a little expensive.
Yeah, it's more expensive than the stuff you buy today, but not much, believe it or not. In the commercial world, it's not much. Residential, it would be much
manufactured
more.
In America, may I ask?
Everything's made in the U.S. That's right.
Very important.
As far as I know, we're the only ones doing that, but I could be wrong.
I love that.
I'm fairly confident in that, though. And also, we're sourcing 95% of our components within about a 200-mile radius of Charlotte.
Oh, that's
wow,
good.
Cool. Right here in our backyard.
Yep, that's right.
So you're developing something for a year or two without being able to sell it and make money.
That's right.
What is your mindset during that time, and how do you keep it in check?
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things I think I've personally gone through is...
I'm going fucking broke.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot of faith and a very long view to ride through that long because, I mean, look, this is one of those situations where it's a venture capitalist worst nightmare in a lot of ways. Not purely, but a lot of hardware, a life safety device. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Never been done before, and the big, huge companies have tried to do this before and have not succeeded.
Wow.
So here's little Adam Power located in little Charlotte, North Carolina, and we're going to go to try to build something that no one's ever done before and is perceived to be the holy grail of power distribution by electrical engineers. I mean, it is. This is something that has been long sought after. So how do you keep that in check? Well, I think the thing was not to get sort too philosophical on this, but for us, it was about making, you know, the meaning was behind it. Mm-hmm. First, it
was. Well, you had faith that you could do
it. But how did you even have that belief that you're like, it'll work?
Yeah, well, a lot of it does take faith because it is a huge technology leap. But me and my co-founder Dennis, we knew that there were things in place today from a technology standpoint and from a demand.
Mm-hmm.
That with a high probability led us to believe that not only could we do it, but it would be there would be a demand for it.
Wow, that's
so
cool.
Okay, take us back to the day. You got the product, you plug it into a wall or a power box, mm-hmm. and you test it to see if it's going to work. What happened?
Well, I guess related to that, I'll be the first to tell you, we've never had a eureka moment. That's been one of those. It's been a misconception. And most companies will tell you that. There's never a eureka. Like,
interview over.
We had a... But it is worth saying, like, okay, so you know the diverging a little bit. The Wright brothers picture that we all have on our license plate in North Carolina, at least. where there's the plane
on the beach.
And they're standing there.
Yeah.
There's some context behind that. That's taken as a eureka moment, where in actuality, that was one of many photos that were taken. And that just happened to be when they were 18 inches off the ground. The next one, they were around 20. The next one, around 20. It was very similar with Adam Power. We built a prototype that was big, not feasible. It was in a Radio Shack hobby box, to be even more specific, and didn't look like a breaker. But we at least got functionality working. And we said that, okay, we've tested enough to know that says the technology is feasible. It's there. We can make it work in a lab. Then the next iteration, we 3D printed a box. Next iteration, we learned about what Underwriters Laboratories requires of the box, and sort of the configurations and shapes and things. And it was an iterative process that just took a very long time. Wow.
So it was one triumph after another.
Yeah. Well,
making it smaller, making it work, making it respond, documenting the circumstances, and so on into the night.
That's right.
And
that's
I'm assuming each win or victory created more belief in the product and the possibility of it.
It did. It did. And that's the easy part. I mean, the hard part was the multitude of failures we had along the way.
Yeah.
And we hear about that, like failures. Yeah. Yeah,
you were convinced, and then you became a disciple of the process.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the hard part was the failures, though, because that happened more than we won. Mm. You know, really.
So, how did you overcome those failures?
You know, there's a couple of things you could look at. One is that I think if you can check the box in the physics that says the physics are there, you know, there's a solution. Mm. That's what a lot of people I've seen not do in the technology sector is they don't first check the fundamental box that says, okay, physically this is possible. It's just a matter of figuring out the configuration that's going to make that happen. Mm-hmm. I think that was a part of it, to know we did that up front.
Yeah.
You know, and to know that this is not impossible. It's just figuring out how to do it. And the other one is I would say that I hate to say work hard and stay in school, but it is kind of like that. It's just knowing, I guess it does relate to that. Just knowing that that's there, you know, and communicating that to the team that it's for a bigger cause and that the physics are there. We just have to figure it out.
And you have to make payroll. No, you have to make payroll.
Yeah.
Well, so you got to go find venture money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So how did you make that sale to venture capitalists when the product itself didn't actually exist?
Well, we had built a couple of prototypes first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we spent our own money and for some time after that, actually, and built a couple of prototypes and showed it to a couple of folks who understood the industry and who could see instantly that a digital breaker would be a game changer. Oh, yeah. And we got some initial money, you know, to go build that further. And then, you know, the one thing I think we did right in raising money was to stay out of stealth mode. We never went into stealth mode, and it was like, we're a secretive company, we're doing this. So I think what that caught the attention of was some of the other circuit breaker manufacturers, you know, because we were very open and engaging and for a bigger cause other than Adam Power, and they liked that. And we still have that model, and I think that made other breaker manufacturers comfortable to go invest in Adam Power. So we raised additional capital along the way with what we call strategic investors.
So something happened that's like pretty special today.
Is it your birthday?
Today, yeah. Well, so the circuit breakers you see in the house or in a commercial building, they all follow a similar or the same actual standard by an organization called Underwriters Laboratories, or UL. You've probably seen the sticker.
Well, you have to see it on everything.
Yeah. Right.
Do not remove this label.
I never knew what it was about, but yeah.
Kind of like the FDA approval for a drug.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
Yeah.
So we successfully got the first ever solid-state circuit breaker through UL.
Cool. Way to go.
That's a standing ovation if there ever was one.
That's awesome.
I think you can probably go to anybody now and raise a bunch of money because people are going to want to jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends on... Yeah, it depends on what business you're getting engaged with. But yeah, you're right. You know, we're not trying to raise much money. That's one thing we've been really frugal. And not because we're trying to, you know, maintain ownership or anything like that. It's more about, you know, looking at what do we actually need to get through and use whatever we can, whatever leftover energy to make sales. That's basically wow. what it
okay,
boils
so
down
diehards,
to.
Okay, so diehards, pay attention to this. You're out there trying to get testimonials. Ryan has the ultimate testimonial in that not only has a third party approved and said they approved what he did and what it's going to do, but they were the benchmark that they were trying to get to be able to, it's like having the drug that cures cancer to be FDA approved. I mean, you have literally now have an open door to any place in the world that could potentially use your product.
All right.
Thanks for being here.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah,
great job.
Thanks.
If you're a sales leader and you just heard this segment and you're thinking, man, I really should get that Gittimer Learning Academy, stop. You need to get the Learning Academy for your entire team so they can get better. And you can track, measure, and monitor everybody on your team after they've taken the assessment and learn about how good they are and or where they need help. And you as their leader can now actually coach them to victory.
If you're a strong, smart, successful sales manager and you want to be featured in our Sales Manager Spotlight series on Sell or Die, all you need to do is email sellordie@gittimer.com. If you know someone or you have a favorite sales manager who's amazing and should be featured, nominate them at sellordie@gittimer.com. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
Sell or Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.